803 RC Country Hobbies on Folsom Boulevard is waiting for you. Not just toys for big boys and girls. It's for everyone in the whole family. David, Katie, Nathan, full strength 2 days this week, as a matter of fact, before Katie goes back out on the road.
We'll still be full strength. It's not like I'm not going to be doing the show.
Right here in good old Sacramento, Madison Avenue. Want to remind you, if you missed the first 2 hours, we've just been giving away a load of Rogue One premiere tickets. Yes, you're all nerds like me, or many of you are. Rogue One, we have the premiere seats Wednesday, 2 days before anyone goes and sees the movie, and these seats are guaranteed admission. Now, again, a lot of radio stations, you know, you'll do these giveaways. They oversell. They oversell the theater by like three times, and you just got to get there early. It says seats not guaranteed. These are guaranteed seats, Arden Fair Mall.
Guaranteed, you say?
I'm telling you, guaranteed. Wow. I'll be there Wednesday, 8 o'clock, with my little Darth Vader hat on, nerding out, ready to go. Every single segment, this entire show, you hear the little Darth Vader breathing, the lightsaber, the sounder. Yeah, much like that.
Not like that.
Great impersonation. You, that's just you on a Monday morning before coffee. You be the fifth caller, as in red five, as in Luke's call sign. Yep, we know what we're doing, and you win those tickets. Sean Salisbury coming up momentarily. Ken Rudolph is back from vacation.
Kenneth.
At 8:30. Somebody texted me earlier and asked me why Yorgos Papayannis has two straight DNP coaches' decisions in Reno. I don't know why.
I could venture a guess, but it's not.
I'll try to find out.
Be real positive.
I mean, I don't know. It's a coach's decision thing.
I don't know.
I don't know.
So development's right on track.
Yeah, I'd say so. He's learning how to not start.
Right.
And that will, you know, whatever. Final.
What is he, 19?
I did tell you before we went to break, forget Joe Montana, forget Tom Brady, forget Peyton Manning, forget Derek Carr. The king of the comeback is Jim Caldwell. Why, you ask? Well, the Lions had their eighth win this season after trailing in the fourth quarter, breaking the 2009 record set by those Indianapolis Colts. Those teams had one common link. It's Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell owns both records. How about that? I guess technically he owns one record and just beat the other. So if you want to be, you know, that person. Joining us right now, he owns all the records for being just a great guy on and off the air, a phenomenal analyst. I say the best guest in sports radio going right now, if there were power rankings, is my good friend and yours, Sean Salisbury. Hello, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, man? That's about the only top of the list I'm going to be at, so thank you.
Hey, listen, before we get started, I want to say something. You know I'm a devoted follower of yours on all the social medias because you put out some good stuff. I don't mention this that often, but I'll mention it again. Sean and I go way, way, way back when I got fired and did the podcast, and Sean and I do a show every single day for nothing other than the love of radio. We met on the air, became friends, and Sean and I did a two-hour show every single day, and Sean, I know during those times, whether it was the passing of your dad, all the stuff you had going on, you and I would talk off the air, and despite your personal issues, and you had a lot of them you were going through, you always had a great attitude, and you were always a professional. You put out a little note, a video over the weekend on social media, and if you don't follow Sean, you should. I thought that was pretty freaking inspirational what you were saying about people going through some garbage in their lives.
Yeah, you know what? I know what rock bottom looks like, and rock bottom looks different for everybody, and I wouldn't be able to speak to rock bottom if I hadn't been through, you know, when people say, oh, I know what that's like, you know, for a male to say, oh, yeah, I know what it's like for a female to be pregnant. No, you don't. You don't know the pain they go through. Yeah. You don't know that. So I know what rock bottom looks like in the same year when you lose your house, you lose your dad, you lose a career. And there's times when you wake up in the morning and realize, you know, I don't know if I can get through this day. So I do realize I know what rock bottom looks like. And it's always hyper-focused and hypersensitive for all of us, you know, at this time of year because of holidays. Some people are depressed. Some people are happy. And everybody goes through it. Everybody's going through some struggle. They just are. And we don't know. And, you know, we think about, you know, when we're criticized and that person, you know, whether it's sports or in life, that person may be going something that we don't know about. So haven't been a guy who's been through rock bottom and haven't been humbled beyond belief and realizing that how grateful I am every single day. I know it sounds kind of cheesy and corny, but I really am. I used to think that I was compassionate and understood what that kind of stuff and adversity was about. But until it hit me square in the face between the eyes when I thought that, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to wake up the next day, to be quite honest with you. And when you're popping six Percocets and drinking a half a bottle of Jack Daniels or Johnny Walker Black at Christmas time, it's hyper-focused wondering, how am I going to get through it? And in the end, you know, with kids and everything, I realized exactly what you got to live for. My self-worth, and you say this to athletes and anybody, and I think a lot of men at times go through this, where your identity's locked up into what you do in your career. And it helped me to realize that it shouldn't be. So I'm blessed to be back doing what I love to do, but more importantly, I'm healthy. And it was just simple to let people know that if you immerse yourself into helping somebody else, your woes and your, whether it's feeling sorry for yourself or your depression or difficult times, can go away. It doesn't take a pill or a doctor to tell you that, but you're helping somebody else less fortunate, because somebody else is less fortunate, trust me, or going through worse than you are, it'll kind of help you. And it helped me to immerse myself into somebody else and take in a homeless man at one point to where he lived with me for 15 months and we changed each other's lives. It was tough, but you know what? I'm grateful beyond belief that I was able to go through that. You know, we're always grateful for the good times, but I'm actually grateful that I got kicked in the throat and it was at rock bottom. I didn't like it then, but it really did become trampoline. And as I'm working on a new book now called Rock Bottom is a Trampoline, it's just simple life stories that help people that are going through difficult times, give you some laughs and realize that you actually can get through it, and that the tunnel, there's a bigger and brighter light at the end of it. So it's important to me.
Sean Salisbury joining us. You're a good egg, dude. And segueing out of that perfectly, would the 49ers and Jed York perhaps need a copy of that book? Do you feel like yesterday against the Jets, although in the big picture probably a good thing, but snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, as we've been saying, the York family saying Balky's probably gone, Jed York might be reassigned or fired. Is this about rock bottom for that franchise to you?
Yeah, I think it is. In football terms, it probably is. And so, you know, people are going to lose their jobs because of it. Players are going to go on to different teams or never play again. I mean, they may never get a shot. And, you know, when this kind of stuff happens, we're a league that's, and we're a society that wants results. And this is a historic franchise that's had so much success. And you'll get some that say, hell, I don't feel sorry for the 49ers. Look at all the Super Bowl rings they have and the trophies and the Pete Rozelle trophies and stuff sitting in there, the Vince Lombardi trophy, should I say, you know, sitting in their complex. But you know what? Sometimes you got to hit rock bottom in order to rebuild a franchise. We've seen a lot of teams go through it. Hell, what was it, 2-14 years ago when the Carolina Panthers, who is a newer franchise, went 2-14 or 1-15. I think it was 2-14 1 year. 2 years later, they're in the Super Bowl with Jake Delhomme. So it can happen. This is a very proud franchise. And, yes, you know, sometimes, and you hate to see it, but sometimes your head's got to roll and people got to be shaken up a little bit to realize either how good they got it, not to take it for granted, and what it takes to build a franchise. It's not just rich guys signing paychecks that really may or may not know football. You got to put good football people. And I've always said this, Dave, and guys, that to me, and the Patriots are such a great franchise about it, and they look at San Antonio the same way. Matter of fact, most people, if I said, who's the owner of the San Antonio Spurs? You guys know, you're basketball fans. I know. You know, most people don't know. Because you know why? The owner signs the checks and turns football over to football people. Then the football president and general manager get together, like the Denver Broncos, and hire a good football guy, or John Elway, who's a good businessman, who then hires good coaches. And then you let your coaches coach. And then that coach hires assistant coaches. He expects to be head coaches. You don't hire assistant coaches. You expect to be yes men and kiss your ass and tell you everything you want. You hire guys that will push you and challenge you and make things better. And then those guys go out in the scouting department, finds good players. It's really, there's really no mystery to it. Good players, X's and O's are great. Jimmy's and Joe's are better. So you know, the 49ers need an overhaul, bud. Just like a car that needs a new engine, the 49ers need an overhaul. Now, wherever that starts and wherever it ends is one thing. But even if you're the guy that hands out towels and pours Gatorade all the way up to the guy who's scouting, I would imagine you might want to pick up the tempo or get your resume ready, because things need a change in San Francisco. Yesterday was brutal, losing to a team that, act quite frankly, to a rookie or a second-year quarterback who's not very good. That's just, it's been typical of the 49ers. They know how to lose now, when it used to be the 49ers knew how to win.
You know, Sean, it's not even just the fact that there could be a change in the front office, but also reports saying that NFL owners believe that Jed York's parents, Denise and John York, will be taking a more hands-on approach with the team moving forward. We've had some stuff, I believe it was a cousin retweeting some, you know, kind of negative stuff about Jed York earlier in the season. What's going on in that family in terms of how they're managing this team?
I don't even think they know, Katie. I don't. Because if they did, this would, when it comes to, well, the hardest thing to do in anything is to take whatever's going on in your personal life or in your business life or outside of what your job is, whatever that is, and make sure it's like a, it's like when, you know, if a quarterback's having trouble in a marriage or, you know, he's whatever, doing too many indoors, the distractions that come along with, you got to be able, when you walk into the building, realize this is your job. This is what we do. Now, it's hard to tell millionaires or billionaires that because they may have 15 other jobs. This can't be a hobby, okay? Now, I don't know the Yorks. I don't. I knew the DeBartolos and Carmen Policy and that whole group and Bill Walsh and from all the way down. I have a relationship. I don't know the York. I don't. So I don't really know what's going on in their decision-making. I know this. If they don't hire good football people, if you hire somebody whose ego is bigger than the team, whether it's a front office guy, whether it's, you know, the Trent Baalke, Jim Harbaugh thing, if you're going to do that, you're not going to win. Great organizations make sacrifices, and they're willing. I get the hunch that they think they're the smartest people in the room. And if you think you're the smartest people in every room you go in, then you may be the dumbest of all of them. And I don't know. I don't know what goes on away or what they're doing at home or what they talk about. I know this, that a good football organization is run by good football people, and paychecks are signed by people with a lot of money. So whoever that is, when they say they're going to take a more hands-on approach, I hope that hands-on means getting the right football people in and realizing that in a team, this isn't golf and tennis, okay? This is, there's a whole bunch of lives at stake and there's a whole bunch of people involved, and you have to be a good giver, not just a taker. And great organizations are willing to delegate and trust the people they hire, even if you don't like them. Hell, we've all had a boss that we can't stand, but you say, you know what, he's good. Or whatever that we got to do. We've all played in. I played in locker rooms with guys. You know, that guy, I would hang out and have a beer with that guy. But damn, I'll tell you, on Sunday, that fool will show up and kick ass for me and run through a wall. So it's the same thing there with the 49ers, and it's all hard for us to watch. Hell, even for non-49er fans, football's better when the 49ers are good. Just like football's better when Notre Dame's good. That's just the way it is. And so I don't know what their hands-on approach is or what they're going through, but until they decide to hire. And do what to look what the Raiders have done. When you get a football guy who understands that the owner doesn't call the shots, that the owner isn't the general manager, that the owner isn't the football coach, you hire great people around you and smarter than you. Great businesses hire somebody expertise in different areas that they don't know. You can't be the greatest marketer, the greatest salesperson. You can't be a doctor and a lawyer at the same time, although some think they can. When you're willing to do that, then your franchise will get better. And the ones that are, and put ego aside for team, will win. And the good franchises are doing that.
Well, whether or not, I mean, in this report, Mike Shanahan saying that, you know, it's possible that he may be brought in some kind of a coaching or executive capacity. Is he one of those good football minds, good football people that you're talking about?
Hell yes. Hell yes. Now, Mike's one of those guys. You know, when Mike was a head coach and a GM in Denver, there was at times when Mike, and I think he's looked, I'm a big Mike Shanahan fan. When it comes to straight out play calling and understanding football, one of the best we've ever had. At times, you know, Mike, and at times good coaches and good football people are control freaks because they want their hand in everything. You know, Mike wanted to know to make sure that everybody knew what kind of coffee was in the building, and that's okay. But Mike understands that franchise. Mike knows football. I can't fathom that Mike Shanahan's not in football right now. I mean, whether it's an offensive coordinator, if that's what he wanted, or a head coach. Come on now, are you really looking around telling me the 32 NFL head coaches or front office guys or presidents, whatever it is, that know more football than Mike Shanahan? Hell, believe me, he's forgotten more than he's forgotten more than anybody in the ownership office of the San Francisco 49ers knows. So, yes, if you're looking for a consultant, a coach, whatever it is, Mike Shanahan's a great football guy. And he may be a guy that rubs people at times the wrong way, but that's okay. Maybe people in that organization need to walk down the hallways a little scared of their job. Every now and then, again, the fear factor, that respectful fear is good. And I know one thing that Mike Shanahan, aside from Super Bowl rings, Mike Shanahan has instilled that when he, wherever he's been, that you better you don't call him Mike. This is Coach Shanahan, wherever he's been. So, yeah, I do believe he's a guy that would help a franchise in a hurry. The guy gets it, and he's well-respected in the league.
Sean Salisbury's with us on Caged TK. So when you talk about the actual nuts and bolts of a rebuild, front office personnel be damned, you got to have a quarterback, Sean, and the Niners aren't going to get the first pick in the draft. But is there even one guy in this draft that's worth spending a top three pick on at quarterback, much less two?
No, I don't think so right now. I actually think the kid from North Carolina is the best pro prospect today. Now, I've never seen a sport where people rise and fall in the offseason in shorts and a T-shirt more than they do in gear. We got a guy, Deshaun. At the beginning of the year, Deshaun Watson was a clear-cut number one pick, right? I mean, it wasn't even close. The first pick of the draft was going to be Deshaun Watson. And now you know what people are saying? Late first round. There's some experts that got him in the second round. Mm. Deshaun Kizer, five games into the season. Oh, he's the number one pick. Now it's like, well, look what Notre Dame happened. Can he win? He's a pocket guy, but he's got good. So it'll fluctuate. And Mitch Trubisky, that nobody talks about, the kid in North Carolina, is one of my favorite because he looks the part and he can rip it. But is there one guy that I look at and say, there's your franchise guy? Now, that franchise guy may be in the fourth round, Dak Prescott. That franchise guy may be Deshaun Watson. But there's going to be so much going as the combine and personal workup. We'll have so much banter. People talk themselves out of a pick in the offseason more before the draft, more than they talk themselves into it. We have a guy, I'm telling you, I've seen more guys, oh, he's a top five pick. And by the time April rolls around, April 1st, April 10th, they're like, man, I don't know. He went from a 4.42 to a 4.4. Really? Really? Can the guy play football in a pair, in a shoulder pad in a pair? Chris Spielman couldn't run that fast. He'd knock you around. Zach Thomas, I mean, is he a football player or is he not? Can he help me? Is he durable? Does he make every play? That's what I'm looking for. I think the combine and all that's the most overrated stuff on the planet. You know, the measurables, I guess, are important. But when it comes to a quarterback, what does he have? So I don't look at a guy right now. I don't see Elway or Aikman or one of those guys where you say, oh, my gosh. But one thing about it that you have to understand is we're in a time of whether it's attrition, bad quarterback play, that sometimes franchises are forced into a pick that maybe they don't want to make. To me, is there better football players in this draft that can help a team immediately than the three or four quarterbacks that we mentioned? Yes. Now, next year is a different ballgame, whether it's Lamar Jackson or Jake Browning or Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold. Now we're talking guys that are between the tackles, sit back, let it rip with some athleticism. But one of these guys this year could be. To me, is there a guy that's going to change the Cleveland Browns and San Francisco 49ers around in 1 year or 2 years? No, but there's always a guy that rears his head at some point. So I would start to look at the guys like, you know, Myles Garrett or Peppers or a dominant offensive lineman. When in doubt, to me, when I draft my quarterback with the first pick or the first five picks of the draft, he's got to have Hall of Fame credentials, he's got to be a constant Pro Bowler, and he's got to change my franchise around, period. And if he doesn't do one or all three of those, then he didn't really do me very well and win me a championship, then he doesn't do it. I don't know if one of those guys exists right now. It may change in 2 months.
Sean Salisbury joining us. And Sean, sticking on that note there, at least with the college football aspect, we learned a few minutes ago Lane Kiffin will now be at FAU after being rumored for the Houston job. Here's what's interesting. We already know what Florida State and Florida are doing and Miami's doing. But my goodness, Lane Kiffin at FAU, Butch Davis at FIU, and South Florida gets Charlie Strong. They're bulking up a bit in Florida.
They are, and they're going to need those. And there's one thing Butch could recruit. I know, guys, I used to go watch Lane Kiffin play high school football. His dad was on our – Monty was on our – staff on defense in Minnesota. We'd go watch him play. So I still kid him and call him a snotty-nosed kid. I said, you couldn't even throw a curl route. How in the world did you invent football? We joke around, and he's had three opportunities, and he's had some good and some not so good. And I think being around Nick Saban, I think at times guys do mature. And I hope that Lane has learned that, you know, everybody, it's well documented, the ego and some of the things he's done. And I think he's worthy of another chance. I'll tell you this, when it comes to play calling, as an offensive coordinator, he's one of the five or six best we have in college football. Now, the question is, I'm not a big believer in managing people. I'm a big believer in you manage things and lead people. The question is, I used to think that Lane's leadership was kind of forced. Now, did he learn something from Nick? Has he learned from his past? Has he realized that in order to lead people, you got to be passionate and honest and true and transparent? And I hope he is. It's an odd when he got it's kind of an odd fit, but I love what the way you mix that with the Florida States and Floridas and Miami's the way they're going. and the three coaches you just named. But there's plenty of talent in Florida to go around. Good for Lane. You knew he was going to get a chance. You just didn't know where. We'll see if he can make something happen there. But you knew the opportunity was going to come. And this is nothing more for him, I hate to say it, than a possible springboard if he can make that program work to another job. And I think they know that too. But if it works for 2 or 3 years, God bless him and good for him that he learned something. But he sure is a hell of a play caller and a guy that's put Alabama in some pretty good positions offensively.
Sean Salisbury joining us as he does every Monday on The Drive. Sean, before we let you go, I got to ask you, with just 3 weeks left in the regular season, which team in each conference do you think that's kind of on the fence right now do you have as a lock for getting into the postseason?
The team that continues, you know, they're not like on the fence, but the way the Kansas City Chiefs continue to take care of their business, I'm impressed with them. Now, as far as teams that are sitting on the fence, I think a couple teams to watch for me are, one, keep an eye on Tampa Bay. They're on a win streak. Mm-hmm. Quarterback's got guts. And I don't know about a lock. Nobody other than the first two or three teams, like the Cowboys, the Patriots, those type of teams, the Raiders, to me are locked. But keep an eye on Tampa Bay because they're playing in a division they can win, and they may be able to chase down Atlanta in that situation. And another one to keep an eye on in the AFC is, whether it's good or bad, I'm curious about Denver. They've got a brutal final three games. Their offense has not been very good. They can't run the football. They rush for 18 yards. I'm anxious to see if that defense can carry them again into the playoffs. And you know what? I'm keeping an eye on Seattle. They're playing some bad football right now, mm-hmm. after playing some good football, the loss of Earl Thomas. And I'm going to tell you the one team that's dangerous. I think Detroit's going to win the division. But don't count out Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers yet. They're getting right and getting hot at the right time. And when that dude's on, they are nasty. That's a team to keep an eye on, not just for the playoffs, but late January and February, especially in an NFC that we saw last night with the Cowboys, can be very vulnerable.
Well, and you know what? It wouldn't be out of the ordinary, speaking of that. If you told me right now the Packers were going to play the Steelers in the Super Bowl, I'd think you're crazy, but not psycho.
Dave, one thing I'm sticking with for sure is I picked Pittsburgh and New England in the final. As a diehard Raider, I got my Raider hat on today. I'm a diehard Raider guy. I want the Raiders in it, trust me. But I picked Pittsburgh and New England in the preseason to get to the Final Four, the Final Two in the AFC, and I can't change that. I want the Raiders to pick this up, and I hope they do, but I'm not going to back off that one. Ben's right in that offense, even though he threw it to the other team a couple times. And I still think the best team in the NFL and the team that you have to beat to get to Houston in February, if you're in the AFC, or if you're going to win the Super Bowl, I think it's still the New England Patriots. I just do. Brady's just too good.
At Sean Unfiltered, follow him for fantastic stuff. We always appreciate you, Sean. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Let me share the story, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
I'm a little concerned about one thing, though, because, you know, I'm a Packers fan, right? Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers has had a hammy issue, left hamstring issue for the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Right calf strain yesterday's game.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Don't panic. Everyone calm down.
Relax.
Everyone relax, drink a beer, have some scotch. We'll take a break. When we get back, you know what that sounder means, and we still have more Rogue One tickets to give away to the premiere on Wednesday. That's right, KHDK premiere, guaranteed you getting in. We got a lot of stuff still, the Bear Coat moment of the game. Also, Ken Rudolph back from vacation. He's next with the news of the day on The Drive. No flipping. Sports 1140 KHDK. That's Rudy Gay after the loss versus Utah. Those are your Sacramento Kings. We want to remind you of a couple of things. First off, congratulations to Kevin in Sacramento for correctly knowing the Bearco moment of the game. It certainly wasn't the end of the game, but it was this in the third quarter. Congratulations, Kevin, and congratulations to all the winners today of Rogue One premiere tickets. Been seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter and on the text line. People just, they're one caller off. They're two callers off. We only got 4 minutes left in the show. And that sounder is going to pop one more time, so you have your opportunity. Make sure you listen closely for that sounder. Be the fifth caller, and you're going to the premiere. The Lakers play the Kings tonight.
Oh, boy.
Back at the Golden One Center. The Lakers have been losing a lot lately. They lost last night, and Luke Walton had this to say.
Lakers the Lakers have lost
again.
Yeah, that's Bill Walton's kid right there. My goodness,
the Lakers have lost six in a row. And
perfect.
But seriously, you also have to look at it. I know that's always dangerous when you think about it. You also have to look at it. Two of those were blowouts. The rest of them were very close games. But they've been without D'Angelo Russell, I want to say 11 games at this point because he had some kind of a knee issue that's been plaguing him, so he received some treatment on it. And then he and Nick Young both returned. Nick Young missed 6 games with like a calf strain. So those two killed us the first go around. They're still on slight minute restrictions, but this is a game that it's dangerous in many ways, but kind of they all are.
Well, they're such a young team that, I mean, you could kind of see a letdown coming, and not to say that they don't still have a bright future, but, you know, sometimes teams like that can catch squads off guard through the first 20, 25 games of the season. Yeah. You're not expecting that much talent, whatever. And then when teams kind of start to get into midseason swing, teams like this tend to hit a wall a little bit. And unfortunately, the Kings have just made a pretty good elixir for teams like this over the last few years.
Must win game tonight.
Well, I mean, what? Like, is the
must win?
Is a sinkhole going to open up underneath the Golden 1 Center?
Yes.
Any matchup, regardless, as long as it's against the Lakers, is a must win to you.
Yes.
What's amazing to me with this group is like how quickly things turn around in the wrong direction. I mean, didn't they win like 3 of 4 or something like that, and you get a blowout win in Dallas. And I mean, let's be honest, right? Like 8-13 isn't great, but you know, after a couple of decent games in a row, you start to think, okay, the tide could be turning. They're getting more competitive. And you look at 8-15, and suddenly that's just a lot.
The Portland Trailblazers are 12-13. They are the 8th seed in the Western Conference. If the season ended today, their point differential is -2.5. The Sacramento Kings are at -1.8. That's good for 8th in the Western Conference. That is the one thing that gives me a little buoy of hope, is that they have been in a lot of close games if they could just figure out how the hell to close them. But you know, it is.
Well, and some of them is how to start them, too.
That's exactly what it is. That's a great point. It is, and speaking of closing, by the way.
Sometimes a lot of things in the middle, like why you would ever leave Carmelo Anthony with any breathing room at all, is beyond me.
There's that, too. Why would Joakim Noah make 2 straight free throws? That still bothers the hell out of me. Speaking of closing correctly, Vern Lundquist is an absolute legend. Mm-hmm. He was a guy who was told many, many times in his career that he didn't have what it took to go national. He did his final SEC game over the weekend. Here's what his sign-off was. That was after he got choked up when he started talking about his wife, too. Vern Lundquist, by the way. That's Darth Vader.
And I've told the story, but you know that he, like, you know how he met his wife, right?
Mm.
He was, I forget where he was, but she was there on a date with another man. And he was just like, dude, that's the woman for me. And was like, hey, if this doesn't work out, you say you give me a call.
Gangster.
And here they are, whatever, 3, 4, 5 decades later.
3, 4, 5, 6, 9 decades later. Like,
Vern Lundquist is the man.
Literally the first time Vern Lundquist and gangster have ever been put in the same sentence. Finally, it was a big, big day he'll never forget, as Lamar Jackson's life changed forever on Saturday.
Even care anymore?
Nope.
Congratulations,
kid. Have fun in the late first round, probably. That's it for Matt George, Kevin Sheritz, Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen. I'm Carmichael Dave. We're back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your broadcast day right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Bye-bye.